Women in Crime is a true crime podcast hosted by real criminologists.
Each episode will bring you a new female-focused case deconstructed by experts. You'll hear the stories of these women paired with the science that tells us where it all began.
Listen and learn why on Women in Crime. Listen to Women in Crime now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Casual Criminalist. I, as always, am your host, Simon. Welcome, welcome. What happens here? One of my writers, in this case, Emma. Thank you. Emma has written me a script, The Pink Panthers, The Real Life Ocean's 11. I feel like The Pink Panther is something that I feel like I should know more about, but it's literally a show I haven't seen since I must have been about 5 years old. Is that the one where there's literally a pink panther and he's stealing stuff? And is it Detective Clouseau, or is that a different show? He's trying to catch him all the time. But I guess the Pink Panthers are also based on something real. And I also feel like I know that because I might have made a video about them before, but it was so long ago and I've made so many videos that I've entirely forgotten. Anyway, this is the real life's Pink Panthers, the real life's Ocean's 11. I've never read this before. Did I mention Emma wrote this for me? Thank you. Jen edits it afterwards. Yes, that's what we do here. Let's just jump into it. If you're anything like me, the term Pink Panther immediately brings up an image of a pink cartoon panther along with the well-known Pink Panther theme music. Is that the one that goes, do? Oh god, I'm gonna get this totally wrong. Do, 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 do. That is it, right? I had no idea where I was going for that, but as soon as I got started, I knew I was there. You might even be old school and immediately think of Peter Sellers' incompetent Inspector Jacques Clouseau, yes, or the white-haired Steve Martin in the more recent remakes. But in today's... Steve Martin, does he act anymore? So a recent remake? Steve Martin, he does, right, but he's old. Or am I imagining someone else? It doesn't matter. But in today's story, the Pink Panthers refers to a network of jewelry thieves that could be described as a real-life Ocean's 11, complete with elaborate disguises and daring getaways. Yes, Simon, today's story not only features three heists and some excellent police work, but a prison break as well. These are all things I like. I love prison breaks. I love heists. I don't know why, because it's like, I think because we cover so much murder on this show, and you're like, f*** you, getting away with murder, you bastard. But when someone steals some jewelry, you're like, yes! Do it!
What the f*** is wrong with you, man?
But if someone stole shit off me, I'd be really upset, so I don't know why. I think it's often because they're stealing off bad people. At least that's, you know, the mood, like Ocean's 11 and stuff. But I guess that's not really the case most of the time. People steal off good people, because if you stole off bad people, they're bad people. Like, if someone stole jewelry off me, I'm not going to send, like, a team of assassins to hunt them down. Whereas if you steal jewelry off, like, I don't know, a bad person, maybe they will send a team of assassins to track you down. So look, there's a lesson there. Only steal from good people. Okay. Unfortunately, though, there isn't a lot of information available on Pink Panther investigations that have been solved, but this elusive group of jewel thieves has warranted multiple podcasts as well as a documentary that continues to fascinate people from all over the world. And the best part is, not only would a video about them not get you and your family killed, but no one dies in this episode. Oh, I love it when my family aren't getting killed. That's great. So without further ado, let's get into it. Speaking of getting my family killed, I was making a video for Into the Shadows, which is a YouTube channel that I do where we explore all this really dark stuff. And let's just say there was a topic that one of my writers wrote for me, and I'm reading this, and it's just describing how, like, yeah, and then this journalist wrote about this group and they ended up getting, like, thrown off a balcony, and it was like suicide. And then someone else wrote about this, and they ended up at the bottom of a lake or whatever. And I'm like, I just stopped recording the video and I was like, yo, bro, I mean, appreciate it, but I'm not going to be able to make this video because I am not a journalist and I do not want to die. The Dubai Job. At 9 a.m. on the 15th of April 2007, the hallways of Wafi City in Dubai were quiet. The Egyptian-themed shopping center is located only 10 minutes away from Dubai International Airport, and it offers state-of-the-art gyms, restaurants, high-value retail stores, spas, a luxury hotel, and even a swimming pool. Since the mall only opens at 10 a.m., mall employees were slowly making their way to their workplaces, chatting along the way and browsing social media. on their cell phones. Then, at 9:36 a.m., a black Audi R8 reversed into one of the main mall entrances, breaking through the glass doors. It was followed by a white Audi R8, and the two cars proceeded to skid to a stop at the end of the mostly empty hallway while the shocked mall employees looked on. Isn't an Audi R8 a sports car? Isn't that the one that Tony Stark drives in that Iron Man movie? Or am I imagining something else? Like, if I'm robbing somewhere, I don't think a sports car would be my choice of robbery. I'd choose, like, one of those big Audis, or one of those big Mercedes, or, you know, something a little more sturdy with four-wheel drive. The doors of the black Audi burst open, and masked gunmen got out, causing the mall employees to scatter as the black Audi once again reversed at high speed, smashing into the entrance of the Graff jewelry store. A second masked gunman got out of the car, and the two men walked into the store, weapons raised. The store employees ran into the back room to hide and were followed by the second masked man, while the first stood watch by the door. Satisfied that the terrified employees weren't posing a threat, the second masked man broke the glass display windows with a hammer, tossing the jewelry into a black bag as alarms went off all over the store. One of the drivers in the Audis honked twice to indicate that their time was almost up, and the two men rushed out of the store towards the two cars while mall employees looked on, catching the incident on video. The cars then raced out of the mall, got on the highway, and disappeared. And this is the thing, like, yes, okay, so the Audi R8 might be excellent for making a getaway, but also there are cars that are extremely big. Like one of those, like one of those Mercedes G-Wagons or whatever. Those things, they look like a f***ing box, but they can go from 0 to 60 in like 4 seconds or something ridiculous. I mean, if you buy like a powerful one. And it just feels like that would be a better vehicle of choice rather than an actual sports car. They managed to get away with jewelry worth $3.4 million, and it only took them 2 minutes. The CCTV footage of the robbery is still available on YouTube, and the Dubai job became one of the Pink Panther's most famous heists. They even followed a few of the casual criminalist rules for perpetrating a successful crime. That's good to know. They are thieves in a rich country. Yes, they attempted to get rid of any evidence that could link them to the crimes, and they even set the two Audis on fire before racing away in another getaway car. No wonder these guys haven't been caught. They know the rules. You have to set all your shit on fire. And also, being, we've discussed, this is one of my favorite rules. You definitely want to be a thief in a rich country because there's more to steal. And also rich country, Dubai is probably an exception. Also rich country, like a thing of like Northern Europe, also the United States, they're pretty intense with their crime shit. But just think like Northern Europe, Switzerland, like these like super rich countries where they're also like, prison is nice. Whereas if you do robberies, okay, but it's got to be rich country with nice prisons. Not like rich country like Dubai, where they'll also like stone you afterwards. But I also said attempted to get rid of the evidence because whoever lit the match on the Audis forgot to take science into account while they were making their getaway. The flames in the closed up Audis burned all the oxygen, leaving tons of untouched evidence for the police to sift through. Yeah, you can't just set a car on fire. You have to use an accelerant. Come on, everyone knows this. Honestly, I would have made the same mistake. Come on, Emma. Everyone knows this. You have to use an accelerant on a car. You can't just expect it to blow up like in the movies. But if I ever have to torch a car in the future, I'll know to leave the doors open. Is that enough? I really think you have to, like, cars aren't just going to burn. Like, isn't that something that used to happen in the past, like, where people would steal cars and then set them on fire? I don't think it works like that anymore, do they? They're too safe. All right, but just, look, why not use some accelerant? Look, you're planning this crime. Why not cover it in kerosene and then set it on fire? Take your time. Destroy the evidence. The police in Dubai were this isn't advice, I realize I'm just shouting, destroy the evidence. Is that a crime? Don't forget to destroy the evidence. This is all allegedly. It's not advice. Don't do this. It's just a joke. The police in Dubai were able to collect up 14 separate DNA samples from the car, and 4 days after the heist, they sent all the data they had to Interpol. The police had also managed to establish that the Audis had been rented by a 25-year-old woman named Bajana Mitic. Matai's like Maltese. Or whatever, like, it's Mitic. Since she used her phone number on the car rental contract, this allowed police to obtain copies of her phone records and track down everyone that she'd been in contact with. What are you doing? You really should have torched that car properly. Also, who rents a car to commit a crime in their own name? Surely this Bajana woman is a patsy. The phone records and DNA samples enabled the police to identify 8 people who were involved in the robbery. Well, maybe she is a patsy, but she's also really... Maybe she was semi-in on it? Really? And from my research, it appears that at least two of them have been arrested, though the jewelry was never recovered. The Dubai job is perhaps a prime example of your typical Pink Panther heist. They're fast, they're efficient, over the top, well thought out, and yet not quite perfect enough. Mostly because, as the saying goes, too many cooks spoil the broth, and in an organization as big as the Pink Panthers, mistakes are unavoidable. Also, the problem is the more people you get involved in your crimes, the more likely it is someone's going to roll over on you. And, well, it's not a good time, is it? Keep your crime small. Work with a small group of people. Don't be like, don't get your mates involved. Pink Panthers International. As with many criminals we've covered on The Casual Criminalist, the group that is now known as the Pink Panthers only got their name after they reached a certain level of infamy. In this case, the group got their name when another Graff jewellery store was robbed in London in May 2003. A tall, hulking man walked into the jewellery store on that fateful morning. He wore an elaborate Elvis-style pompadour wig and a suit and an umbrella clutched under his arms. You know that if you work in, like, this Graff jewellery store, which I've never heard of... I don't do a lot of jewelry shopping. You know, if you're just standing behind the counter in there, right? You're just like, oh yes, take a look. This is a 3-carat diamond set in a solitaire. Blah, 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 blah. I think solitaire is a type of diamond, not something that would... It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And some dude dressed as Elvis walks in. You're like, you don't ask why you're dressed as Elvis. Just immediately raise your hands in the air because you're getting robbed. The store staff, used to the eccentricities of the rich and famous, didn't bat an eyelid at his odd appearance and politely assisted their new customer when he asked to examine their collection of rings. Really? A guy dressed as Elvis and you're like, oh, rich people be weird. Really? The clerk presented the rings to their eccentric customer and he picked up a 12-carat diamond ring that was priced at $450,000. He studied it carefully, turning it this way and that, and then he announced... It's too glamorous. Do you have a smaller one? The clerk was still formulating a response when the man pulled out a chrome-plated Magnum 357 and yelled, "Everyone on the floor!" A second armed man then entered the store and used a hammer to smash the glass display cases open, stashing 47 pieces of jewelry worth more than $30 million in a bag before taking off. Why is this possible? Why do jewelry stores not have smash-proof glass? Okay, so maybe it's a bit thicker, maybe it's a bit more expensive, but when you have a $450,000 ring in there, if I was their insurance provider, I'd be like, bro, you can't just have glass protecting this shit. When I was at school, they even had, you'd have this glass in between, like, if you had a big glass window, it would always have wires running through it for some reason, because apparently they thought we were, like, gonna break the windows and escape. I don't know why it was like this. And you couldn't break it. Like, several times they got smashed because kids. And they wouldn't break. You know, all the wire would be, the wire would hold the glass in place. Why can't we just do that? And I know it's slightly ugly, but people who are coming into the jewelry store, they're going to understand. They're going to be like, okay, I get it. Crimes and right? Jewelry stores, this is on you. Stashing 47 pieces of jewelry worth more than $30 million in a bag before taking off. The first man held the store staff hostage for another few seconds to give the second man time to get away before he too took off. My favorite part of this story, however, is the security guard on duty, a man called Simon Stearman, chased him down the street intent on getting the jewels back. The man shot at Stearman, missing him, but one of the bullets grazed the nose of a bystander. Stearman, being the fearless badass that he is, managed to tackle the robber to the ground and then proceeded to sit on him to keep him from getting away. His colleague Clinton Dilo arrived to help him out. According to one of the podcasts I listened to, Stearman then grabbed the man's wig and hit him with it, telling him that he looked like a bloody idiot. Is that right? I feel like that's something that a podcast like this would say, and it's like, it's not factually accurate. That was just one of Simon's tangents. Don't quote it. Both men were rewarded with £700 for their efforts. If someone fucking shot at me in the line of my job, I'd want more than 700 quid, to be honest. Although, to be honest, as the security guard, I'd be like, I am not chasing the man with a Magnum 357. I'm just not. I'm sorry. You're going to have to fire me. What is that? Is a security guard expected to chase down armed thieves? Because he doesn't have a gun. This is London. He does not have a gun. Surely that's not part of the job. But I honestly think they deserve more than that, even though the second man had managed to escape. Yes, obviously. When Detective Steve Alexander from Scotland Yard arrived on the scene, the first robber was being sat on and would later be identified as Nebojša Denić, a Serbian national who worked as a janitor in a Swiss hospital when he wasn't moonlighting as a jewel thief. Scotland Yard was also able to link Denić to two other men, Predag Vujasevic, a Montenegrin man who had been casing the graft jewelry jewelry store for at least 2 weeks before the robbery and managed to escape on a scooter. And Milan Jovetic, another Montenegrin national who acted as the fixer and had been responsible for making the travel arrangements for his two accomplices. Scotland Yard was able to determine that Jovetic and his girlfriend, Anna Stankovic, lived in an apartment in Bayswater in West London and eventually managed to obtain a warrant to search their apartment. When the police got there, the apartment was empty, but they managed to lay claim to several blank Italian passports. You know you're a serious criminal when you have blank passports. You ain't just some dime store jewelry thief with that shit. You've thought about this. You've somehow managed to get blank passports from somewhere. You've been shopping on the dark web. They couldn't find any obvious hiding places for the missing jewels, but one of the detectives somehow thought it would be a good idea to dig his fingers through a jar of face cream and discovered that Jovetic's girlfriend, Anna, had hidden a blue diamond ring worth $750,000 in there. It was the only piece of stolen jewelry that they'd been able to recover. That's pretty smart. That's a really good hiding place. I mean, if I was searching someone's apartment, I'd get there eventually, but it would take a bloody long time to think to look in the jewelry, in the face cream. When the Daily Mail heard about the face cream incident, they dubbed the group of criminals the Pink Panthers after the 1975 film The Return of the Pink Panther, in which one of the characters, Lady Claudine Lytton, hides the infamous Pink Panther diamond from her lover, the jewelry thief known as the Phantom, in a jar of body cream. But it was only after Detective Alexander traced Vujacevic to Paris that he realized exactly what he was dealing with. Along with the French Brigade for the Repression of Banditry, that is really France. You and your nose for things. That is epic. A special police unit that investigates organized crime, they concluded that there had been at least 20 other robberies that matched the modus operandi used in the London graft heist. Investigations into these robberies had linked Vujacevic to robberies across Europe, including jewelry heists in Paris, Amsterdam, Frankfurt, Geneva, and Barcelona. Vujacevic would eventually be caught and was described by Detective Alexander as a little bloke, the kind of guy you wouldn't notice twice in the street. He was very polite. Very articulate. I think that's the sort of perfect criminal. The guy you wouldn't notice twice in the street. You don't want, like, you imagine these, like, Pink Panther jewel thieves, and I imagine them, like, striding around in, like, really smart suits with, like, cool sunglasses. And in reality, it's like, no, just looks like a regular dude, because that's exactly who you want. It's like spies don't look like James Bond. They just look like regular-ass people. As innocuous and as not interesting as possible. Vujacevic didn't confess to his role in the London robbery or gave Scotland Yard any indication of what had happened to the rest of the jewels, and after months of investigating, Scotland Yard still couldn't find out what had happened to the rest of the stolen jewelry. The Eures police soon realized that they had a much bigger problem on their hands. They were now dealing with a group of professional and experienced jewelry thieves. Who are the Pink Panthers? In the years that followed, police all over Europe, Asia, and the USA would slowly start to put some of the puzzle pieces together, giving them an idea of who and what the Pink Panthers are. David Samuels from The New Yorker is credited with writing one of the most dedicated, detailed articles on the Pink Panthers, and his 2010 article, The Pink Panthers, A Tale of Diamonds, Thieves, and the Balkans, is the main source of information for this episode. According to the article, a lawyer named Michael Jugnet, who represents one of the convicted Panthers, said that the Pink Panthers are people who were involved in the Balkan Wars in one way or another. Some theories suggest that the Pink Panthers consist only of 20 to 30 members. Others estimate that there are over 200 Pink Panthers working across Europe and Asia. Most of their members hail from the former Socialist Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. They are Serbians, Montenegrins, Bosnians, and former Yugoslavians. They grew up in an era of skyrocketing inflation, rampant corruption, never-ending sanctions, a sinking economy, and war, and had learned from an early age that obeying the law would have put food on the table. They'd been forced to live off the scraps of Western Europe, and now the world's riches were theirs for the taking. The Pink Panthers is made up of small groups of gangs that had all grown up together, fought together, or had worked together before. They have a logistical support network, but the Pink Panthers can't be described as a criminal organization since they lack the hierarchical structure of organized crime syndicates like the Sicilian mob. The mob's always been so risky, and like, I get why it's structured that way, but oh boy, does it expose people to being rolled over on. Like, the number of times it's like, what do they call it? Like, turn state witness. State's witness? Something like that. Where it basically means rolling over on your mates. And it's like, how many mob people have been brought down by that? Because someone's like, no, just roll over on the big guy so I don't end up in prison and I'll take the witness protection program. That happened many times. I think, like, a more cellular structure, like terrorist cells do it, is smarter. At most, they're a network of criminals who all know a friend of a friend who might be able to put you in touch with somebody with a specific set of skills. The only thing that enables police to link their crimes together is their signature modus operandi, and boy, is it distinctive. That's a clever way of doing things, just keeping everything super vague. The Tokyo Job. The Tokyo Job is perhaps one of the most detailed accounts of how the Pink Panthers operate, especially since we not only have the Tokyo police's version of what happens, but first-hand accounts from one of the Panthers as well. According to Lydia Radulovitz, the wife of Alexander Radulovitz, one of the Panthers who had planned the heist, she met Alexander at a party in Belgrade, Serbia in 1992. He joined the Pink Panthers in the late 1990s, and his extracurricular activities ensured that they were able to live comfortably despite the war that was raging all around them. According to Lydia, he used to rob with the same group most of the time. He did it for money and excitement, and so he could continue living a fun life in Belgrade. The fun always came first. The couple was on holiday in France when Alexander got a call from one of his contacts proposing that they pull a heist on the Le Supre Diamant Couture de Mackie, aka the Mackie, the jewelry store boutique in the upmarket Ginza district of Tokyo. Alexander agreed and was later introduced to another Serbian national, Jordi Rasovic, one of the other Panthers on the job, shortly before leaving for Tokyo at the end of February 2004. A Scottish woman named Dorothy Fasola acted as the fixer, making hotel reservations and purchasing cell phones for every member of the group. Why is there a Scottish woman involved? It just seems to be dudes in the Balkans, and now it's like, boom. And now there's a Scottish woman. Jordi and Alexander traveled to Tokyo separately using valid Czech and Croatian passports. How are they valid? They're not from these countries. Snezana Panajotovic, a Serbian woman from Niš, also arrived in Tokyo using a Czech passport. I mean, I understand they're valid passports, but they're not valid if you're traveling on someone else's passport. On the 24th of February, Alexander was the first to scope out the Mackie. He later claimed that the one who is doing the action should always scout the target. Alexander had casually asked the store clerk if he could view the Comtesse de Vendôme necklace that was on display there, and the clerk agreed, taking Alexander up to the second floor where the necklace was kept in a glass case. Here's a photo with you, as I just had to Google the necklace to see what it looked like. Okay, I'm sure it's being shown on screen now, but for our podcast listeners, it's a big diamondy necklace. It looks like the whole thing, even the chain that goes around the neck, is made out of diamonds. It's pretty fancy. It's quite over the top. The gorgeous diamond necklace with matching earrings. Oh, okay, so yeah, there's earrings along with it, which are also, it looked to be entirely made out of diamonds. It looks very expensive. Let's just say that. Consisted of 116 diamonds, with the centerpiece being a 125-carat diamond pendant. The collection was estimated to be worth, good lord, $31 million. And Alexander made a point of admiring the necklace with all of the enthusiasm of a true connoisseur. Somehow, he was allowed to take photos of the necklace and then was shown other pieces of jewelry that were on display before leaving the store. A few days later, Alexander returned to the Mackie, but this time, Snezana pretended to be his girlfriend, and the two cooed and flirted as they made their way through the store, eventually purchasing a necklace and a bejeweled silver spoon to keep up their ruse. On the 5th of March, Dorothy and Snezana were enjoying drinks at a cafe across from the Mackie, where Snezana had a bird's eye view of the street and the surrounding stores, making sure their escape route was clear. Dorothy called Alexander 3 hours before the heist and confirmed that everything was ready. 11:45, Alexander and Jordi entered the store. Both of them were dressed in suits and wigs, and Alexander was also wearing a beige coat with brown leather gloves. He had a bag with a Cartier logo on it, and he made his way up to the second floor where the necklace was held. Alexander walked right up to the clerk, who was stationed there, took out his phone, and took photos of the flustered clerk, shouting, "Perfect and great!" like some demented professional photographer. Alexander then walked up to the glass case that held the necklace, pulled out a piece of paper from his pocket, and showed it to the clerk. The clerk stepped closer to see what was written in it, and Alexander punched him in the face and squirted pepper spray in his eyes. The clerk later said, "He started pushing me towards the bathroom, hitting me in the head the whole time. He closed the door, and then I heard the glass break. When I pulled myself together and washed my eyes, I called the police on my cell phone." It was too late for the Comtesse de Vendôme, though. Alexander and Jordi had already fled the Mackie and had already managed to escape on motorcycles long before the police arrived on the scene. Just like the London job, the entire robbery took less than 2 minutes. Alexander and Jordi would board an Air France flight to Paris that same day. Snezana and Dorothy would follow soon after. Alexander would be arrested for attempted robbery in Copenhagen, Denmark, where he was identified as one of the Panthers who pulled the Tokyo job. He was then shipped back to Belgrade for his trial and insisted that the heist had been ordered by the owners of the Mackie so that they could lodge an insurance claim and that it handed it back to them in exchange for $100,000. However, Alexander's lawyer is convinced that the necklace no longer exists and that every one of the 116 diamonds has been cleaned and resold, destroying a truly stunning piece of art. Yeah, this is one of those things, like with diamonds and especially gold, where someone like robs a museum or something, or you know, and they melt down the gold, and it's like you have destroyed a priceless artifact to make some gold, and now that gold is like super untraceable because it's gold. According to David Samuels, the Tokyo Police's investigation into the heist is one of the best examples of masterful police work. The Tokyo Police presented copies of their investigation into the 2004 Tokyo job at the 2009 Pink Panther Working Group conference that was hosted in Monaco. The conference is hosted annually by Interpol, and in 2010, the 80 police officers who attended the conference represented 23 countries that are all working together to find and capture as many members of the Pink Panthers as possible. The investigation into the Tokyo job answered a lot of questions about who the Pink Panthers are and how they operate, but also raised the question of who is protecting them. This is because usually the Pink Panthers manage to avoid being captured because their home countries don't have extradition treaties with other European countries, or the officials charged with finding them get their cut from the profits. Uh-oh, little bit of corruption there. But they all leave their home countries at some point, and everybody makes mistakes. Is that a good idea, though? But this has happened so many times in the casual criminalist. It's like, yo. If, like, Interpol are like, yo, you got to go over to Tokyo, mate, because they want you for stealing that big-ass diamond. And you know this. And you're like, you know what? Screw it. I just really want to visit, I don't know, let's say France doesn't have an extradition treaty with, does have one. And I just want to go, you know, I want to drink some wine in France. And you go and you get arrested. It's like, just, you've got to accept it. Look, you're a criminal. You know what's better than prison? Like, sure, prison is confining, but what's less confining is just being able to spend the rest of your life in one country. Jesus. A case of sheer dumb luck. In October 2008, one of the men who had been linked with the Dubai job traveled to Monaco. He was 31-year-old Bosnian national Dusko Poznan, and he was traveling with young Serbian national Borko Ilincic. They had rented an Audi A3 in Italy and arrived in the city at 11 a.m. They were busy casing Cirabelli, a secluded jewelry store that had already been hit by the Pink Panthers the year before, and while Dusko crossed a busy street, a car clipped his ankle and he collapsed in full view of dozens of Monaco's infamous CCTV cameras. The concerned citizens of Monaco quickly called an ambulance for Dusko, who eventually agreed to be taken to the Princess Grace Hospital. Borko got into the ambulance with him, and after the two men arrived at the hospital, the police turned up to question them. According, why would they be questioning you? Because he got hit by a car. I guess that's, you have to be questioned because they think he's a victim. According to Andre Mühlberger, and then the then chief of police in Monaco, the two officers were there to perform a sobriety test on the two men, something that's apparently standard procedure when a victim is injured in a hit-and-run incident in Monaco. It makes sense, because, like, if a drunk person is wandering into the street to get hit by a car, obviously the driver's liability is going to be less. But one of the police officers, a man only identified as Alain, had an epiphany when he saw Dusko, saying, "In a quarter of a second, I told myself, I know him." You see, Officer Alain had recognized Dusko since his wanted poster from Interpol had been gracing their office walls for almost 2 years. What are you doing going to Monaco and casing out a jewelry store when you are on Interpol's, like, most wanted list? You didn't commit crimes in Monaco. And if a Monaco police station has your picture on the wall, bro, you gotta lay low, or you gotta change your identity or your face, or, like, just not be a criminal anymore, or not get seen by any police ever. Because otherwise you're going to jail. The surprise police officer immediately arrested both men, and Dusko was sent to Liechtenstein to stand trial for a robbery that he committed in 2006. His friend Borko was sent to Switzerland to stand trial for yet another robbery. But Dusko wasn't the only Panther who was caught simply because he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Simply because he was an idiot. He went to a country where they're going to catch him and then send him to another country where he can be prosecuted. You got to stay in your, like, non-extradition country, dude. What the f***? You're on the walls of police stations. What are you doing? On the 29th of May, 2008, Detective Yann Glassy from Geneva, Switzerland, was arriving at a hotel lobby in Gex, France, along with two other detectives as part of an investigation into a group of Russian nationals who were suspected of stealing luxury watches. Detective Glassy was checking in with reception when he looked up and spotted a familiar face across the hotel lobby. Within seconds, he realized that the man was Milan Lejpoja, another panther who Detective Glassy had interrogated 2 years earlier in connection with the jewelry heist in Liechtenstein. Milan, realizing that he had been recognized, ran out of the hotel lobby and into the hotel parking lot, dropping his suitcases along the way. Detective Glassy chased him down the street, and Milan jumped a fence of a school, injuring his leg, before disappearing amid the crowds of panicked school kids. Police dogs eventually found Milan hiding behind a bush on the school grounds, and when Detective Glassy confronted him, he got up, calmly dusted himself off, and said, "Good job." It turns out that Milan was one of the Panthers responsible for planning the Dubai job, and during his interrogation, Detective Glassy casually mentioned, "You did a good job in the hot place." Milan asked whether Detective Glassy was referring to the Dubai job, and when he confirmed that he was, Milan smiled proudly and said, "Go on YouTube and put in Dubai robbery."
"We were just having fun."
And then he proudly walked away as he was led back to his cell. All for one, and one for all. Dragon Mickets is probably one of the most well-known members of the Pink Panthers. According to David Samuel's article, Dragon grew up in Bosnia, and like so many of the other Panthers, he turned to a life of crime to keep him and his family fed. On the 31st of January 2003, he was one of the Panthers who robbed a jewelry store in Courchevel in France, managing to get away with $500,000 worth of jewels. Amateur numbers. Well, the other guy's got away like 31 million in Tokyo.
Boy, what a loser you are.
All right, I know, it's a lot of money. The next day, he tried to purchase a train ticket in the neighboring town of Albertville with a 500 euro note. Mate, that is mad suspicious. Like, why do you have 500 euro notes? We know they're only used by criminals. I think they stopped making 500 euro notes because they were just used by criminals. The transit clerk got suspicious and called the police, and Dragan was arrested on the spot. The police managed to retrieve his bag and recovered the stolen jewels. His lawyer described Dragan to David and said that he had an ironic grin on his face. "These guys don't care about being put in jail. They know they are going to escape." If you got 500 euro notes and you're a criminal, right? What you need to do is go to some place where they're not going to be suspicious of you having a 500 euro note. Like, I think the only time I've seen one was at a foreign exchange shop. You know, where someone's coming in and they've obviously traveled to a country with like large bills so they can exchange them at the foreign exchange place. Just take the 500 euro note that you have, go to like a foreign exchange place and change it into dollars, because that's what they do all day. They just exchange money. Then take those dollars, take it to another foreign exchange place and swap them back into smaller euro bills. Yes, you're going to lose some money, but it's way less suspicious. You're welcome, criminals. I don't know how I came up with that. There's probably a big flaw in my plan, like that those guys are also tracking that shit, because this is an obvious thing that criminals would do. And on the 17th of November 2003, he would attempt his first prison break. After attending a hearing, Dragan was being escorted to an armored vehicle when he managed to break free from his guards. He ran out of the court's parking lot and crossed a busy highway, but his brilliant escape plan was foiled when one of his guards managed to shoot him in the leg. But not to worry, Dragan was then relocated to a more secure prison in Villefranche-sur-Saône. And as we all know during our episode, Jailbreak, the International King of Escapes, it's a lot easier to escape from French prisons than you'd think. Yeah, also, I know France is a rich country, but it's got famously bad prisons. So don't do crimes in France. I don't know if that's true, but what was that movie? Was it The Man with the Iron Mask, where Leonardo DiCaprio's in that French prison? And it's horrible. I know that was a long time ago. No, it's not. It's not that. Or maybe he is in that as well, but he also spends time in a French prison in Catch Me If You Can. And it's also, why is his characters love French prisons? Wait, was DiCaprio even the man in the Iron Mask? Was that him? It doesn't matter, but what I know from Leonardo DiCaprio movies is you don't want to go to French prison, especially in the past. One lazy afternoon in 2005, a white truck pulled up outside one of the prison walls. Two men casually got out of the truck, took two of the three ladders from the truck bed, and placed it against the prison wall. One of the men then made his way up the first ladder, while his accomplice went to get the third one, and when he reached the top, he began firing an AK-47 at the guard tower. The second man tossed a pair of wire cutters over the wall and then lifted the third ladder over the wall and waited. Dragan had been waiting on the other side, cut through the roll of barbed wire that separated him from the prison wall, placed the ladder against it, and made his way up and over the wall, where the second ladder was waiting for him. This is a rudimentary prison escape that is somehow working. All three men then got back in the truck and raced away, and Dragan hasn't been seen since. Successful prison escape. Damn. He would be the first of the Pink Panthers to escape from prison, but he wasn't the last, and he would be linked to several more heists in the years following his escape. The legacy of the Pink Panthers. Some people in their native country still see the Pink Panthers as national heroes, even going so far as to liken them to Robin Hood. Except they're not giving any money to the poor, they're just stealing from the rich. And by rich, I mean insurance companies, because that's who pays the jewelry stores when they get robbed. I don't understand this, like, romanticizing this stuff. I think it's fun, and I think it's interesting, and it's like the same way I admire, like, I don't know, like, brave people. Like, people who do crazy shit. It's not admiration, it's just like, wow, the ball's on you, son. It's interesting. I don't think they're Robin Hood. I don't think they're good people. I think they're greedy people who just want money and don't really want to work very hard to get it. And look, I'm not trying to say that their situation when they were growing up and they had to steal to feed their families, obviously that is different. But when you're stealing a $31 million necklace, that goes beyond just basic need, doesn't it? And it was an ideal that some members of the Pink Panthers seem to have clung to. After everything they witnessed during the Balkan Wars and after watching their parents lose everything to a corrupt state, embracing crime seemed like a simple solution to their problems. One of David's sources claimed that the citizens of his city thought that it's really good to be a criminal because you can go in EU or some other country and make some money. Then you get back here and you have cars, you have buildings and other things. It's really, really good. Wow, they really are obeying the rules of the cash for criminals, aren't they? Go be thieves in rich countries. And even better, go back to your own country, which doesn't even have extradition. Surely all the EU countries have extradition with each other. That must be like, because you've got free movement of people, right? I mean, or maybe these countries weren't EU or still aren't EU. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert. Let's just move on. The members of the Pink Panthers would often return to their home countries and spend their newfound wealth inspiring the next generation of entrepreneurs and opening new businesses to launder their money. But the truth is that the Pink Panthers are just another group of criminal gangs that call the Balkans home. They allegedly worked closely with the Italian mafia in exchange for allegedly giving the mafia a cut from their profits. In exchange for this, they'd get logistical support and protection from the police. Again, allegedly. And despite their claims that they are simply stealing from the rich and enabling the poor, they're still criminals, and they've left hundreds of victims in their wake. Alexander from the Tokyo Job would tell David that the international media like to hype up the heists committed by the Pink Panthers, and that they, quote, make a huge mistake by making all of this sound like some movie-like and attractive story that is easy to identify with, although there's nothing heroic in it. I made some choices for my own reasons, but it is absolutely unacceptable to let some kids out there identify with such a story. I also think there's a big difference between, like, Ocean's 11 isn't inspiring anyone to do bank heists and rob casinos. That's just it isn't, right? I'm just doubting myself for a second there, because it does make it look really cool. But I don't think, you know, number of heist movies I've seen, thousands, dozens. Number of heists I've committed, zero. So far. Allegedly. At least 50 members of the Pink Panthers have been arrested by 2013, but the number of heists that can be linked to them has wound down in recent years. Some copycats have popped up in their wake, but by now, most of the original members of the Pink Panthers are in their late 40s or 50s, and their home countries are slowly beginning to work with police instead of against them. With online scams and cons being more profitable, not to mention safer, in recent years, it might mean the end of the Pink Panthers. In a few more years, the Pink Panthers and their heists might be nothing more than just one of those old legends that are mentioned whenever a high-end jewelry store is robbed, although somewhere in the Balkans there will probably be a grandpa or two that like to regale their grandkids with stories about that time they robbed a jewelry store dressed as a woman. Dismembered appendices. Number 1. It does seem as if the media likes to link every jewelry heist to the Pink Panthers. This was especially true in 2016 when 5 men broke into Kim Kardashian's hotel suite in Paris and managed to get away with over $10 million worth of jewelry. The media was quick to link the robbery to the Pink Panthers, but it would later become known that the men who'd robbed her had nothing to do with the Pink Panthers, and instead they were dubbed the Grandpa Robbers, since all of them were between the ages of 60 and 72. Oh yeah, I remember that. We made an episode all about this. One of them, Eunice Abbas, even wrote a book called I Kidnapped Kim Kardashian, in which he details the robbery in full. Ryan down your crimes there, are you, mate? I guess he served his time or whatever. Although it was only 2016, so what was that? 6 years ago? Okay, so he could have gone to prison and got out. Either that or he's made a tactical error. Number two, the 2007 unsolvable $36 million Harry Winston jewelry heist has also been linked to the Pink Panthers. However, from the description of the heist, it's clear that the four men who held the employees of the Parisian jewelry store hostage for over 30 minutes weren't Pink Panthers, for one. They were already hiding inside the store when the employees arrived. Secondly, they violently assaulted the store's employees. And thirdly, the Pink Panthers are famous for getting in and out in under 2 minutes. Number three, in 2001, a group of Pink Panthers painted a bench in front of the store that they were planning on robbing later that day, ensuring that no one would have front row seats to their crime. In 2008, they did rob the Harry Winston jewelry boutique, but this time the two robbers were disguised as women. And in 2005, two Panthers dressed in wigs and floral shirts robbed a jewelry store in Saint-Tropez and escaped the scene in a speedboat. I mean, I don't want to glamorize it, but that is f***ing cool, isn't it? That all the while this theme song playing in the background. In the 2012 documentary Smash and Grab, the story of the Pink Panthers, the Pink Panthers are also credited with breaking a safe out of a jewelry store in Barcelona while the street outside was teeming with festival goers. They supposedly gained access to the store by breaking down a wall that separated the jewelry store from a souvenir shop, using loud music and fireworks to cover the sound of their hammers breaking down the wall. They allegedly managed to get away with $3 million worth of jewelry and loose gems, including a dildo that wasn't included in the list of stolen items and that was reported to the police. Okie dokie. Even though it makes for a fun story, I wasn't able to find any news reports that confirmed that this robbery had actually taken place. Otherwise, I definitely would have included it. Anyway, that's where we end today's episode of the Pink Panther something robbery something. Thank you, Emma, for writing it. Thank you to me for reading it, Jen Edits. And of course, thank you, dear viewer or listener, for watching or listening. And I'll see you next time.